This is Central Time. Most of the world is open ocean, but less than 10% of it is officially protected. Now, after nearly two decades of negotiations, a new treaty sets out to change that with the ultimate goal of protecting 30% of the world's high seas by the year 2030. The United Nations High Seas Treaty would now need to be ratified by individual countries. We're talking about a new treaty to protect the ocean and the ecosystems that exist under the sea. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about conservation, not on land, but in the ocean, and about this new treaty, the impact it might have? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Allison Fleming researches ocean conservation as an associate scientist at the UW-Madison Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, and she's research faculty at the University of North Carolina Wilmington Department of Biology and Marine Biology. Allison, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. It's a delight to be here.
Let's talk about this basic idea of conservation in the ocean. You know, we think of national parks and wildlife refuges and things like that on the land. How common is it pre this treaty to have these out in the open ocean?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are existing areas that are protected in the ocean. But what's really exciting about this treaty is that most of those protected areas that exist today lie within what are called parts of our exclusive economic zones. And that's just sort of the technical term for the waters that belong to each nation. So those are the waters that exist from our shores out to 200 nautical miles offshore. And what this treaty is doing is focusing on the high seas and establishing mechanisms and protocols for making protected areas in the high seas. And so the high seas are all of the oceans that are beyond those 200 nautical miles. And as you just said, that accounts for a huge part of our planet. 50% of the Earth's surface is high seas, and two-thirds of the ocean is high seas. And so ignoring this huge swath of the ocean is really preventing a lot of protection from happening. So by focusing now on these high seas, we can add a lot more marine protected areas into the fold.
Now, looking at it from the outside, an ocean might look like an ocean wherever you are on the high seas. Can you talk about maybe the variety of habitats we might encounter in, as you say, half of the planet's surface?
Yeah, it's interesting. You might think sort of ocean is ocean, but just like on land, the ocean is really diverse and really heterogeneous. So there's certain areas that are really productive. There's other areas that are less productive in terms of biological activity at the surface. And then similarly, opposite kinds of patterns can exist at the seafloor. So there's areas that are underwater volcanoes and mountain ranges, just like we have on land. And those areas might be less diverse in some ways for biological activity, but more rich with regards to minerals and other types of resources that are now especially becoming of real interest to humans, as we need more of these materials for batteries and electric cars and energy storage. One of the interesting things about this agreement, and we can talk about this a little bit more later if that's helpful, but was really thinking about actually the genetic resources that exist in the ocean. And those resources already today have led to things like medicines to treat cancer or pharmaceuticals more broadly. And so sort of these questions of how do we get there, who gets to make things from them, and who gets to benefit from the economies that really scale up from those inventions and resources from the sea.
We're talking about protecting areas of the open ocean. What are we protecting them from? What kind of human activities are we concerned about that can harm ecosystems or maybe even particular species in the ocean?
Yeah, so mostly I think when a lot of us think of the oceans, our first thought is really about fish. And that is, of course, probably our main extraction activity that we still use for the sea. But now we also have seabed mining. We're talking about carbon capture in the sea, different resources, figuring out biochemical properties and compounds that can come from the ocean. Also just in general shipping. something like about 90% of all of the goods that we use in our daily lives get to us from high seas shipping. So they're crossing oceans to get to us. And those ships make a big impact on the oceans. They obviously can pollute at times. They add a lot of noise to the ocean. They can injure or kill animals on their way. They can move invasive species. So there's so many different activities that we take on the ocean that can have an impact. And there had been previously no single treaty, no single mechanism to really look at this in a holistic way. There were already close to about 20 different agreements that did govern the high seas, but those were very specific, and they would usually be about a certain type of tuna in one area, or just seabed mining in one area. And this is the first time that there is now a treaty, an agreement globally that will have a really unified approach to evaluating the impact of any type of activity that's happening on the high seas, have a true environmental impact assessment for that, have a public engagement with that process, and then be able to have countries and different interest bodies and stakeholders either put up disagreements to that or support for that. And that will really make this whole process much more transparent and give law where there previously was no law.
We're talking to ocean scientist Allison Fleming from UW-Madison about the UN Treaty to Protect Ocean Habitats. It took 20 years of negotiation to pass. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We're talking to a marine conservation expert. What do you want to know about how things like pollution, maybe climate change, which we'll get into, can affect the oceans and the various species that live in them? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with UW-Madison ocean scientist Allison Fleming, looking at a new UN treaty to protect the open ocean. You can join in if you have a question about conservation and preservation of ocean habitat. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Allison, we're talking about protecting for certain kinds of activities in, you know, limited areas of the ocean. How about climate change, though? What kind of impact do you worry about there that isn't just localized in one spot?
Yeah, that's a great question. That is a big part of why so many people were celebrating the agreement on this treaty, which, as you said at the top of the segment, has been really 20 years in the making. And obviously, during that 20-year time span from the start of this conversation, the landscape of concern we have over climate change and our understanding of how climate change impacts the ocean, and also the role that the ocean has in mitigating the effects of climate change and being part of the solutions, that understanding has changed so much over those two decades. So one reason that this treaty is so important is because it will help us accomplish a different global goal that was agreed upon last year in 2022. A global agreement on a global biodiversity framework was agreed upon. And that was laying out a goal of protecting 30% of the land, oceans, and coastal ecosystems by 2030. And in order to do that for the ocean, almost every single exclusive economic zone or every single part of the water that belongs to individual countries would have had to be placed under protection. No fishing, no extraction, no activities anthropogenically allowed, and that was impossible. So this high seas treaty is allowing us to protect huge amounts of the high seas. And the high seas are so important for climate because the ocean really helps regulate the global climate in so many different ways. The ocean has absorbed already about 30% of the carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere. The ocean produces roughly half of the oxygen we all breathe every day. The ocean is important for absorbing heat as well and regulating our climate. We estimate that over 90% of the excess heat that's already been trapped by greenhouse gas emissions has been absorbed by the ocean. So we should all be thanking the oceans. And if we offer these additional protections now under the treaty, what it's really doing is kind of improving the overall health of the ocean. Same, just like we can think about our own health. Of course, we all want to do all the things right, right? Eat well, stay active, get good sleep, keep our blood pressure low, etc. If we can do some of those things for the ocean, it allows the ocean to continue to do those really important climate services that we just mentioned, like regulate heat and carbon dioxide.
Now, the climate change part of this gives part of the what's in it for us story here. Earlier, you also mentioned, Allison, the idea that, hey, the genetic diversity of the ocean, we are finding some uses, some things that help us humans as well. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So specifically within this treaty, these are referred to as marine genetic resources. And interestingly, from previous international laws, the resources of the ocean have already been established as common heritage of humankind. So for the global good. And yet to get to the high seas is obviously a very difficult thing. It's 200 miles past all of our shores. So most people will never go to the high seas. And it costs a lot of money. It takes special ships and equipment. And so 10 or fewer countries across the globe account for more than 70% of the fishing that happens in the high seas, and probably about 98% of the patents on genetic sequences in marine life. And those really have potential influences on economies, on medical discoveries, on health, on general biochemical pharmaceutical development. And we're still discovering so many potential resources that are there. If we don't have an agreement that says how those are governed and how they're shared and who benefits from them, it really comes down to a very inequitable approach of countries that have the resources and the ships today to go after those. And then there's no rules in place to say who gets to benefit from them, even though a lot of those findings are of worthwhile to humans around the world. And yet only a small share of countries around the world so far have been able to access them. So a big part of this treaty is actually really going back to those basics of what's in the ocean is for everybody, is a global good for humankind, and we need to treat it as such.
In just our last minute or so, Allison, part of your research involves cetacean ecology, which I think means things like dolphins and whales. What does this treaty potentially mean for the species you study?
Oh, that's a great question. So one of the previous international governance mechanisms for the global oceans that did already exist is something called the International Whaling Committee Commission. And so that's existed for decades. And it's one of the few international governing bodies that actually was focused on biodiversity and conservation. And what's exciting is that what this treaty will do is interact with those existing mechanisms by really requiring states to kind of set a higher bar. So previously, the International Whaling Commission would have looked at the numbers of whales in an area, but really not also considered how many fish were being taken out of there or how much seabed mining was happening. And now this treaty will look at all of those pieces in tandem to evaluate sort of in a space-based, place-based way, how healthy is that part of the ocean? Are we doing enough? And the governments now have to consider all of those requirements to meet this mandate.
Allison, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Allison Fleming, Associate Scientist of the UW-Madison Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and a research faculty at the University of North Carolina as well. She studies marine biology. She joined us for a look at a new United Nations treaty aimed at protecting ocean ecosystems.